This is a Collider.com audio interview.
I wish I had recorded that. That would have been good.
Oh, damn. Oh, goodbye. Let me tell you something. No matter what I do, the reviewers are not going to like this movie. It's the way it goes. Well, some of you are reviewers, right?
Actually, yes, I am.
Yeah. There you go.
I lied.
No, I'm not.
Why do you say that?
They didn't like the first one.
Yeah, well,
and so if they didn't like the first one, they have to pretend they did to like this one. Because this one really isn't that different than the first one.
Actually, I think I can prove you wrong, because I probably wrote some not nice things about the first one, and I like this one a lot more.
Why is that? No, but this is more interesting to me.
I guess we can talk about it later. I think it's more fun, and I think it's sharper.
But maybe it's more fun and sharper because now you get the joke, but you're a little slow to get it the first time.
I wrote last night, maybe I'm smarter than I was 3 years ago.
Love that. I love that. What was odd, too, is that a lot of the reviews the first time said this movie's really stupid. And I'm thinking, really? That was the one thing I didn't think people would say, because
about the first one.
Because this one's very stupid. No. Is that I think people think we made up most of it when we didn't. And we got attacked for history not making sense. We didn't make this stuff up. Those are the glasses Ben Franklin designed. Those are the buildings where this stuff happened. We didn't make up silence, do good letters. This is all real stuff. And we didn't make none of us had even heard of the Da Vinci Code when we wrote the script. None of us had read it because we'd been told it's similar. So none of us read it when we made the movie, and then we got accused of stealing from it. So, and then when that movie came out, all those critics had to like that movie more because they'd already told us ours wasn't as good as that. So it got confusing.
I think the thing that actually may have hurt the first one more than the Da Vinci Code parallels was that about the same time you came out, PBS's Nova did a story about the ultra protection of the Declaration of Independence and how it's locked up and shut down.
Right, but it's what was interesting is that that story wasn't really right, because I saw that Nova when it came out. I'd been to the archives, and I got a tour of how the Declaration was kept. And what was amazing is, honestly, it was kept like in a safe that you'd have in your house. And they had a halon gas thing so that if there was a fire, the fire would go out. But basically, Ernie the janitor could have gone in and shown it to you. After 9/11, they went, it's safe, and spirited it away and redid the security system. But they'd already given us all the plans of the new security system, which we had. So we just did what they told us. It goes down that tube and down the thing into the room, and it goes across the hall when they're working on it into that other room. It was all. And then we got told, oh, we made up a fake system. That's what happens. It's just like that. So, don't blame me. Blame the.
Given all the bad press and reviews that the first one got, were you apprehensive to come back to make the second one?
No, because don't listen. But the people we know who have families in Texas and aunt and uncles in Minnesota matter a lot more to us than critics. Because one of the problems all of us have is we all see too many movies, and so we just don't watch movies right. We can't help it. We know what's coming. We can't help but know where this is going. We've seen that actor in too many movies that year and at too many lunches that year. So it just, we're bad. So if you listen and you really talk to people and you go into someone's house and you see the movie on the shelf and you see it's been watched, they're watching that movie, and you know that there's something that creeped into the zeitgeist on it. I read references, you know, online. On a YouTube thing, it says there was something about a fire, and someone said it looked really like National Treasure, and that's a sign to me that it's out there. And then we said, you know what? Yeah, it made money, but not all in its opening weekend. It built. So there was word of mouth that made the success of the first movie. And the DVD life was so strong. That's all about just people telling each other to watch the movie. And you look and you go, okay, little thing. You know, we did better in red states than blue states. You know, and there's probably more of you working in blue states than red states. So you know, what does that mean to a movie? And by better, not world's better, but there's, you know, there's things. So then we said, well, let's do a sequel, but let's start by coming up with ideas in a script. We, you know, we don't green light a movie until we know we've got a movie to make. And if there's a sequel to this one, it'll be because, not it opens well, but because it has some shelf life. You can smell whether audiences liked it or liked it. And if the new story we come up with works and we feel confident, then we'll do our best to get all the exact same people together again and do it again.
Now, did you write yourself into the corner with this page 47? Because that's what everybody's
all going. You know what?
Yeah.
We can always tell people that's the fourth movie.
Oh.
That doesn't work. Because I've actually seen movies that seem like they were setting up for the sequel, and that wasn't the sequel.
Actually, you know, Bruce was telling people in the lobby at the theater last night, we're asking him, what's on 47? And he kept saying, that's the next movie.
I'll tell you, what is on page 47 is, I think, the single greatest secret in America today, which is the plot of Star Trek.
That's not so secretive, actually.
Yeah. Oh, really? You got it already?
Yeah. What happened with the Lincoln Memorial scene? Why was it cut? And what was
I think my ass is ringing. Hang on one second. That's all right. I've got to call my colon back.
I thought the writers were on strike.
Yeah. Here's what happened. It's funny, you're the first person to... Because I've been asked a ton about the Lincoln Memorial, and you're the first person to mention, wait a minute, it's not in the movie.
Yeah.
In fact, what's so great is I've been watching all these TV commercials, and most of the commercials, the problem is that commercials always give the movie away. Well, in this case, it didn't, because nothing in the commercials made it into the final movie. And we keep looking at commercials going, that's good. Why did we cut that? You know, but they make the commercials based on dailies and your first, you know, four-hour cut. They don't know what's going.
What was the scene?
Here's what happened in that scene. That was going to go somewhere between when Nick goes and talks to Harvey Keitel and finds out this book is real and there's no way to get it, and telling everyone he's going to kidnap it. The president to get it. Not that he does that in the movie. he had to deal with whether it was worthy to do. Is this worth it? And what is the risk he's personally taking? It was part of a little sequence. And he goes at sunrise, basically, to the Lincoln Memorial. And he's standing there in front of Lincoln. And it's sort of a dialogue between their expressions and faces. And he notices the Gettysburg Address and reads the Gettysburg Address, which includes the line, which does come up later. The last full measure of devotion is mentioned in the Gettysburg Address. And in understanding what people give because there are issues greater in life than your own safety, he realizes this is something he needs to do, whether for his great-grandfather, his current father, or even his friend, Riley, who said, trust me on this book thing. But it became a little too mushy, sappy, and, you know, meaningful maybe to some Americans, but you make movies now for the population of the whole planet, and it just sat there as
too rah-rah.
Too rah-rah and too yucky.
Will you put that in the DVD?
Yeah, probably. The photography's too nice.
Yeah.
So you got to show it somewhere.
Wasn't it tough to get permission to film inside the Lincoln Memorial?
It's very tough. And a lot of restrictions went with it. You know, they'll often give permissions for documentaries because the crews are very small. Surprisingly, What's tough about shooting in these places is not security. They're okay with it. They know you're not blowing the place up. Their biggest concern is that you're going to ruin the vacation of a family from Iowa who spent a lot of money to go see the Lincoln Memorial. And what's great about America is that the Walt Disney Company is not more important than that family on vacation. So we needed to promise them that we wouldn't upset access, that we wouldn't ruin someone's trip. We could only send six people in. And you add to it that the Lincoln Memorial is a little special. It somehow has a spiritual quality to it. And I'm telling you, it sounds dumb and hokey, but you'll feel it if you go. There's something very sacred. I was going to try. I didn't have my thesaurus. But there is something. There is a hallowed ground aspect to it. And you'll hear people lower their voice when they go in. Because he was killed. And because of the awkwardness and humble visage of Lincoln. And you read those words that are inscribed on the walls. And it's really very special. And they don't want to destroy that quality by having a circus inside there.
Well, what about shooting in Buckingham Palace and in Paris and all of that?
Screw them. same, really. I mean, the same shooting on the streets of London, you know, a car chase in London, it's almost impossible, but we bite it off in little pieces. You know, we would shoot only on weekends. They would close pieces of streets. You know, there's no street in London that's more than two blocks long anyway. So, you know, you find that little thing, but there's no way around. To go around, you got to go to Ireland, you know. And what we would do is we would set up from 3 in the morning until 6 a.m. till sun came up, shoot till 9 and be gone.
How long?
9 weeks of weekends to do that. It's not cheap.
Palace, did you actually get inside?
No. Actually, and there is we kind of had the inside scoop on palaces that look like Buckingham Palace from Helen Mirren. She likes, you want good queen stuff, I got the queen stuff. Experts, we recreated some stuff. There's an extraordinary palace literally across the square from Buckingham Palace we used. Again, every single person who shot needed to go through, have their names in a week in advance for background checks and security and all that stuff. But if you have the production, you know, you ask, why do movies cost so much? This is one of the reasons they cost so much. You need that amount of bureaucracy on your end to organize all of that and be that prepared to get all that done.
John,
that cost us $72 million just to do that.
John, I want to ask about Jericho. Do you think this writer's strike might be a benefit to Jericho because it'll end up being the only new program when it comes out?
And CBS will probably put it on against American Idol. That's probably how that's going to go. Maybe. It may be. The problem is, if it's a hit, then what? There's 7 episodes. Exactly. We have 7 episodes waiting to be aired. But if they're great, there's no 8th episode. So, you know, who knows? Who knows?
Have they given you a date?
No, but the rumblings are maybe February. They're looking sometime in February. I think that's when they've kind of exhausted what they have. I think it changed, you know, the notion of canceling shows went out the window because they have nothing to replace shows with. So they might as well show what they've paid for and see where it takes them. But strike's bad for everybody.
How hard would it be to mount up after 7? I mean, is everyone all split up again?
Oh, no, we could get going. You just got to do it. And if the strike's not over, it's a problem. You have no scripts.
Yeah, but you could get picked up for after strike.
That's true. You know, we get picked up for September, great. But see, this is what I think they know they made a mistake with the first time, is when we went off the air for 13 weeks, the momentum of the fall season went away. And when we came back after the 11 weeks off, we had lost the flow. The same thing happened to Heroes. Mm-hmm. You know, Heroes had 30% of its viewers lost from the beginning of the season to the end of the season, and that was considered a big hit.
And was that because of they intentionally chop it in the middle and wait? What is the theory behind this?
People aren't really watching TV in Christmas time in January, and we want the season to go longer. And so,
but pay for extra.
Well, more than that, the belief is that on serials like Jericho and Heroes, that reruns don't play as well. So let's not have reruns. So instead of showing 2, rerunning 1, show 3, rerun 1, let's wait and show 11 in a row. So that was the theory there.
We heard that you just finished the film just a few days ago.
Yeah, basically.
How challenging was it to, or how much pressure were you under to deliver the film? And I'm curious, how much how many scenes, how many minutes might have been cut out or might be on the DVD?
You know, nothing gets cut out because you don't have time to make the movie. Unfortunately, I would have loved to them say, you only have 6 more weeks. Don't bother with this. They go, you only have 6 more weeks. You better hurry. The movie comes first, so you just have to. I'm not kidding. It's 7 days a week, sometimes 24-hour days for 5 straight days. That's another reason why movies cost a lot of money. You know, you're working as hard as you can, and then one day you're driving down the street and you see your poster with a date on it. Okay? The movie's coming out that day. Okay? So you're put in the position of, how good is your movie going to be? And I can stay here and not see my kid, or I can just say, it's the best I can do. It's a tough position to put people in, but what are you going to do?
John, can you talk a little bit about...
Go ahead.
I was going to just ask about on the DVD.
You'd look good with his beard, by the way.
He'd
look good with your hair. He's probably more likely.
I'm trying to get rid of it, so I'll take it.
I'm just curious. I don't know what the running time is. Say it was 2 hours.
It's 2 hours.
Right. Do you have 20 or 30 minutes that you think is going to end up on the DVD?
There's two answers to that. The first cut was 3 hours and 55 minutes long. Okay? So there's an hour and 50 minutes about cut. That's a movie. Actually, there's National Treasure 3. I'm done. I want $11 million, please. The fact of the matter is, a lot of... all right, here's a little inside scoop. Everybody knows in the financial world... not knows. Everyone believes in the financial world that Pirates of the Caribbean 3 would have made another $50 to $100 million had it been 45 minutes shorter. Mm-hmm. Okay? The filmmakers will say, you're wrong. It made this money because it worked at this length. The studio says it would have worked at 45 minutes shorter and more people could have seen the damn movie and people can go more than once and all of that. So the studio was really concerned about the length. That's coupled with, I'm always concerned about length. I don't like really long movies. And I know when a movie feels too long. Now, it's dumb to cut things out just for the length. But I'll tell you, a scene can be boring if there's 2 hours of movie in front of it, and not boring if there's 1 hour of movie in front of it. So the film itself can benefit from being shorter. That said, just because scenes get cut out doesn't mean they were bad and doesn't mean they were boring. Sometimes they're terrific scenes. They're just not necessary when you look at the whole thing to the movie. Some scenes get cut out because they just don't quite work. And for me, why would I still want to show that on a DVD? You know, it's like, you know, look what a shitty job we did. You know, it's crazy putting these deleted scenes on some of these DVDs. And I know film buffs and people like it, but they never play great because they're always out of context. So you're sitting there not really watching a scene in a movie. You're sort of watching other things, and it's just dumb. But it sells DVDs and loves it. It really? It does? Will I get more money? Yes, here. So there will be the good deleted scenes will be on there.
Back to the stuff
Thanks,
that's in
guys,
the movie.
Gotta,
did you get any, are you anticipating
go.
Any flack for having Mayan culture underneath the mountains in South Dakota?
No, and in fact, our philosophy was, our idea was that it's not necessarily Mayan. It's Native American.
Stop talking.
And we have undersold and underpaid attention to the art and architecture and culture of the Native American world that had a lot of contact with the North American Native Americans, and that's why I'm leaving.
I have the water.
That sounded boring.